Next in Vogue, we're here with Leanne Elliott-Young. She is the CEO and co-founder of the Institute of Digital Fashion, which is, of course, transforming fashion's transition into the metaverse. Now, she's been dubbed the metaverse mama. She's a great commentator in all things Web3. In fact, she was voted the number one woman in Web3. But she also comments on innovation, technology, and sustainability, particularly in fashion. Leanne, it is an absolute delight to have you here with us today.
Oh, a privilege and an honour. Wow. I'm very excited for our convo.
Incredible, incredible. So, I mean, again, that's an amazing introduction, but tell us in your own words, what is it that you do?
I think we birthed IODF at this emblem for change, and how we saw lots of big like pain points in the fashion industry: diversity, inclusion, sustainability, and the kind of lacking of stepping into any innovations in technology. It seemed that fashion was like the last always to come to these points. So we decided to basically found the Institute as a place that people could come and be a part of this active part of making a change in the industry. So all of our work from that, the work that we do with brands, institutions, and the partners that we have, is all about how you can create the shifts and use technology as a democratic tool for change.
I love that. Technology as a democratic tool for change. I mean, gosh. Yeah. I mean, most people, I mean, folks out there, or folks my age, about Gen X and beyond, are kind of frightened about technology, AI, and everything else that might bring quantum. How do you reassure folks that actually technology is a good thing? Yeah. Yes, it is a democratic tool.
Well, I feel like actually there is a lot to be fearful of, and that's why lots of our projects are birthed. They're generally to do with how can we change the fearful parts. So how do we work? How do we change the biases that are baked into AI, for instance, and technology? So we effectively work with those programs and basically launch campaigns that actually get to the, I suppose, vernacular of the problem, so that more people that know about the problem, say the biases in AI, more people that talk about it or towards it, the more change you can activate within it. Mm-hmm. So I think that, like, for us, we see, particularly in the fashion industry, it's very elitist, very exclusive, and we felt that really there's so many opportunities to allow individuals all around the globe to actually be a part of fashion week experiences, or be a part of the dialogue when the designer is choosing the colors or producing the garment. What would it be, or what would it mean if everyone around the globe again could be a part of that, and for the designer to pull data from that, but then for the audiences and the community to feel they've been a part of this fashion creation. And I think technology does that. It unites us. And from the very start of launching IODF, we launched, and it was then the lockdown hit.
Wow.
Yeah. So okay. It was, some might say it was very serendipitous, but it was, you know, we were inundated. We need avatars. We need digital collections. How do we do this? Yeah. So we then onboarded the fashion industry to the amazing tools like gravity simulating software. But we realized very quickly that not only did we want it to be the large fashion houses that we were educating on how to use said tools, but also as well, how can the emerging designers and, you know, just individuals, you know, in their bedrooms, how can they be a part of that? And I think all of these softwares and tools allow this wider and broader onboarding of fashion as not just a creative endeavor, but as a business. You know, you can have your own, like, times are past, you know, to have a pattern cutter, to have a marketeer, to even have a studio team to create a fashion garment took a lot. Whereas now, if you can have gravity simulating software like Clo3D, ChatGPT, some of the AIs, Midjourney, all of a sudden you've got a marketeer.
Incredible.
You've got a pattern cutter with the Clo3D. And then, you know, you've got a mood board fashion director with Midjourney. Yeah. So I think that's exciting proposition is that anyone can be a part of it.
Yeah.
Then if you balance it with how do you then strike excellence if your technology is doing everything? Well, it's the way that you use that medium. And I think that's why we're seeing lots of emerging designers really be desperately exploratory in some of the larger houses, slowly but surely, you know, picking up.
Perhaps
that's why we're seeing so many of the turning like creative directors at houses right now, because there is a bit of a panic as to what the future of fashion is, because the semantics have changed so much, because trends change so much because of the way that we digest media.
Sure.
So I think there's all these like nuances of where technology can sit in the fashion industry, and we try and actually pinpoint ways in which you can build sustainable business models from studio floor to shop floor, or from emerging designer to global conglomerate, which are all our clients. So that's where we try and sit.
Wow. I mean, you said so many interesting things there, but I just wanted to focus in on, you know, launching during the pandemic. I mean, what better springboard for, a company, an institution like yours to be able to launch, because that was a time when you couldn't do things IRL.
Yeah.
So ultimately it was a great springboard.
It was fantastic. And it was at the same time the British Fashion Council, they launched their gender fluid fashion week. So and a digital fashion week all at the same time. We were blown away. We were so excited. We were like, let's partner with the BFC. What can we do? But instead, we partnered with the BFC in a really bizarre way. Mm. We ended up supporting the designers that were absolutely like stuck. Yeah. They had Brexit as well as COVID.
Absolutely.
The idea of import, export, how they mark up, could even designs leave the studio? Wow. Would anybody ever be wearing real IRL physical fashion again?
Yeah.
All these big questions. And then they had the labor intensive problem of having to then create digital content.
Yeah.
None of them were comfortable with that space. They had to fill their slot, effectively their digital slot. These are physical practitioners. They know how to build garments to go on a model that walks up and down.
Yeah.
But the idea they had, you know, a slot that was digital.
Yeah.
And the answer was from the BFC, make a film.
Mm.
Making a film is a really specific craft.
Yeah.
What do you do if you have spent all your money on a collection?
Right.
So we were like, okay, right, let's solve this.
That's where you stepped in. Perfect timing. Yeah, how ironic, because everyone else was kind of suffering during the pandemic, but actually it was the perfect time for you to have something
totally.
Like that.
Totally. And our solution was, okay, let's build a store. But rather than just building a random store, or I mean, it wouldn't be random. It would probably be quite iconic.
Yeah,
can imagine it would be very black
and
very slippery.
Absolutely.
And very architectural driven.
Yeah.
But let's reach out to Machine. Phenomenal store. Always supporting emerging designers along with the heavyweights. So the curatorial program there is fantastic. It was closed. So we said, okay, let's open Machine.
Wow.
So let's make a digital version. Let's open it. Let's show a core selection of designers that would have been stocked there, but they can't because it's closed. So what we did, we made a digital store. We made it in augmented reality.
Wow.
So we worked with Meta.
Yeah.
We said, look, we want to use, instead of creating ridiculous filters where I look like a baby or my, you know, tonsils pop out into a lizard's tongue, you know, those kind of filters. Let's use your technology smart.
Yes.
Let's actually give something to these phenomenal designers who are stuck.
Yeah.
So we built an augmented reality store and we basically housed all of the designers within there.
Yeah.
But what we didn't show was the final pieces.
Yeah.
When we spoke to the designers, Pierre Gotteson, Martine Rose, they actually wanted to show the work in process.
Yeah.
They actually wanted to show what they were doing right then in the studios and they wanted to say something. Mm-hmm. So we then were like, okay, let's build inside the store plinths. Mm-hmm. When you go into the store, you tap the plinths and it's a message on the future of fashion from these designers.
Wow.
Let's go one step further. Let's democratize Fashion Week by using, now it's not that radical, but back then, We fly posted. We took, we paid for with our own means every single billboard in London. Wow. We plastered a QR code with a question: what is the future of fashion? The semantics of fashion has changed. Right. What is our future? So then everybody, we had people on the bus on the way into town, you know, with their full masks on, scanning a QR code, opening a store, walking in the store and having a conversation with Samuel Ross from A Cold Wall on his soundbite, what was the future of fashion? And that, for me and for those designers, did more than a show, because it spoke about the vernacular, which was not yet processed on what, where is fashion going? Yeah. Everyone was locked down. Nobody was together. So it kind of democratized through technology and united everyone into this question on where are we going to go? What are we going to do? What does fashion mean anymore? So it became almost like a snapshot of a very questionable time. And it was very emotive. And everyone that was part of that were just blown away on how it brought everyone together, as opposed to alienating. Here's a website, make some content. You know, we built our own kind of Fashion Week experience that allowed everyone to be a part of fashion again.
It's about the inclusivity, which is what you're ultimately bringing to consumers, to everyone, essentially. And now tell us, post-pandemic, obviously things have moved on a little bit, but you're busier than ever. So tell us about your six firsts.
So we have six world's firsts. All of them are about doing things that nobody has done before. And some of them we thought must have happened already. But you realise fashion is so slow. They're so slow and they're stuck in their hierarchical, you know, systems of how you do fashion. It's very, very traditional. Paris, Milan, like still like New York Fashion Week is, you know, it's really interesting how fashion is set in their ways. We decided to make the, we couldn't quite believe that fashion wasn't wearable. And as we all know, fashion has changed so much. It used to be you arrived at a show and the press were there, and the buyers were there, and a couple of VIPs. Now it's, and it was very coveted. 6 months later, the depending on what the buyers purchased, they were in the store. And slightly before that, you'd have a campaign. You'd see it in the editorials, in the Vogues, Condé Nast publications. You'd see it on the billboards. It's totally changed now. By the time it touches the customer, there's such a long wait. And really, as we all know, what happens is fast fashion gets in the middle and spins a ripoff of the collection straight from the shows, because everything's live, everything's on social media, everyone can gorge on it creatively. By the time it's in the store 6 months later or the season ahead, the audiences and the communities are already bored. So why don't we just give the opportunity for the audiences and for designers to share the creative expression with their community. So we basically made the collections wearable with augmented reality. And it was phenomenal, the kind of rapport that that got. I mean, everyone went crazy for it. And for us, it seemed to be quite obvious. We've been going on for the last, you know, half a century, just doing the same type of show. You know, they're not under 3 minutes. The walk back and forth. The sets have got bigger and bigger. There's more and more issues with sustainability because the sets get burnt or thrown away afterwards. There's a lot of waste just generally. And then also the point that you miss lots of touch time with the community because you effectively, there's no data points from the show. So we with augmented reality, you can put in colorways that are not in the collection yet. You can make, you can also get live data from different body types, who's actually wearing, who would like to buy, who would like to buy in a different color, who actually would like it was slightly more different, just a drop shoulder here. And that's what technology does. It allows you to have a closer communication with the audience and with your community. They're more connected. So, yeah, so that was one of our world's first.
Fantastic.
We, again, couldn't believe it hadn't happened before.
I can't believe it either.
I know.
We'll get back to the sustainability element in fashion, but what are the other five?
Another one, the big NFT hype. Yeah. I mean, it was crazy. Fashion, we had the D&G crown that was sold for, you know, over $1 million, which there's a lawsuit about at the moment, which is great. So everyone should tune into that.
Yeah.
So NFTs were the big thing. Mm. We delivered quite a few projects with NFTs, but then we realized that actually, as a fashion designer, to have your garments on the NFT marketplace, fashion is all about your brand storytelling, how you curate your your image and your where it starts and where the constellation of different points it touches your audience. Yeah. If it's on an NFT marketplace, some of the NFTs are a rock or like a vomiting trainer. You're like, you do not want one of your couture pieces on there. Sure. So we work with the amazing designer, Roxander, who is a dear friend and just one of the most exquisite designers. She builds, she studied architecture, so she builds fashion in that way. Yeah. She's world class. We thought rather than working with like a digital first designer, let's work with somebody who doesn't really fit the mold at all. Yeah. I couldn't imagine Roxander in all of her really ephemeral collections actually making anything digital. She's so physical. Yeah. So let's create a collection with her, which isn't sold as an NFT, but let's sell it in pounds, not crypto. That had never been done before.
Oh my gosh.
The crypto bros, honestly, we got hate. Our Discord channel almost got shut down. Our Twitter feeds, X feeds.
Oh,
we were slated. Everyone hated us. Gosh. You're taking it outside of the community. When in fact, it's supposed to be about decentralization, when we all know it's not.
Yes.
It's basically a lot of it is a pyramid scheme of just, you know, people wanting to get rich quick and, you know, jump out when it's hot.
Sure.
So we sold it in pounds, not crypto. Mm. We didn't sell it on the NFT marketplace.
Yeah.
We did a whole back-end solution so she could sell her NFT in pounds to her community, but also sell it on her brand website, on her e-com. Why not?
Yeah.
Why not? Yeah. Why does it have to be in that space?
Yeah.
Why is it gatekeeped in that way?
Yeah.
And of course, that was fantastic for fashion.
Yeah.
We made it in augmented reality. So at the show where Anna Wintour was like front row.
Yeah.
So you could effectively, the NFT that we created, we said to Roxander, what would you like to do that you can't do? She's like, well, I do everything. And I was like, no, come on. She was like, actually, there's this one gown that I couldn't make because you would have had to have sticks to hold it up.
Yeah.
It was too big. It was too
fabulous.
So we made that as an NFT.
Yeah.
It had different colorways that you could tap. Mm. And we sold it in very like £5 to £5,000. Yeah. Pounds. Yeah. So it also democratized that anyone wanted to get into the NFT space could.
Mm-hmm.
And also it made more sense in the storytelling to her community. No one's going to want to go on a Discord channel to try and find out about when the drop on an NFT marketplace and search for Roxander. Mm. They want it in the vocabulary. The brand wants it in the vocabulary and the community want it in the vocabulary of that designer.
Yeah, and as you say, it's about democratizing all of it, isn't it? And it is ultimately what you're doing.
And making sense of it.
Yeah.
So it's not an acronym. It's not, you know, I think the hot wallet, the cold wallet, all of these tools were always too complicated. Mm. And the patriarchal like lens it sits within and the tech bros, all of it is about keeping people out and not bringing people in, making it as confusing as possible. So what we're trying to do is build technology that's seamless and that does more for the designers and does more for the community and in turn does more for the fashion culture as a whole, because the semantics are changing so much. More and more time online. So how do we then, as these big brands, which we're feeling now, they're losing touch with the younger demographics. I mean, what is Dior to Roblox community?
Mm.
Half of them don't know what Dior is, or Chanel.
Yeah.
They think Dior is a lipstick.
Yeah.
This is like, you know, when you really drill into what younger communities, Gen Z and Gen Alpha, they're spending more and more time online. they're building creatively. True. They're building new worlds. They're building their own garments. Mm. They want to buy from peer to peer.
Yeah.
They don't want to buy from the old-fashioned houses. Yeah. So part of our job, we have a partnership with Epic Games, is actually speaking the language to the fashion brands, onboarding them to the gaming space so they can build assets that make sense to the younger community, because right now they're losing those whole demographics.
That's true.
But they have egos.
Yeah. I mean, you're doing so much, and I keep wanting to jump in with questions, but I'm still waiting to hear what the other four
of the six were.
Because I know one of them was obviously the first non-binary avatar.
Yes.
And again, as you say, I can't believe that's not been done yet.
Yeah. It was it was such a big moment. We felt that, so within Avatar production, there was a big bubbling in the community. Mm. Lots of amazing softwares, but the great one is Taffy, which is Daz 3D. Mm.
Yeah.
So everyone uses that if you're a creator. And there was lots of bubbling up in the industry, users kind of getting frustrated. And we always believe in, rather than cancel culture and moaning and building subgroups of just, me, you know, that kind of like, instead, let's partner with the stakeholders and create change. That's one of our big things. It's like if we, you know, same with the Meta collab with Instagram, it was, you know, we know the technology can do more, so let's build it. So we went to Daz and said, look, right now, the presets and the way the data is built, there's lots of biases. There's lots of like cis white men are building assets.
Yeah.
They're not particularly diverse. And they said, fantastic. Pride's coming up. We've got lots of different ability in our tech team. We've got lots of queer individuals. We've got lots of diverse individuals, but they're not part of that team. So let's together with IODF, let's build new data sets. So we started with myself and Katty.
Your partner.
My business partner, my co-founder, Katty Tay. We wanted to create a non-binary avatar, so we based it on Katty. Prior to that, if you put male clothes on a female avatar, it kind of would go, it was wrong. You couldn't do it because in the way the data sets are built and the programming, which is crazy. But if you're not thinking that manner in that way, you wouldn't build it to allow for it in the system. So we built the world's first fully rigged, which means it has all of the digits can move. You can put it into multiple different scenarios. Digital double of Katty Tay. It had sliding genitalia. So it means it could be, you know, male, female, those in between. It had scaling in like skeletal, shoulders wider than no. It was, and it also could house male or female assets. So a moustache and the clothes.
That was incredible, massive. Yeah.
I mean, the community was like, wow, it was launched during Pride. It was such a big deal. That led to a big editorial with Vogue Italia.
Yeah.
And that also involved myself and my business partner, Katty, our avatars. Mine was pregnant. So it was a pregnant avatar. Again, never been done before.
Yeah.
No, there's no pregnant avatars.
That's just shocking.
It's such a big part of life, pregnancy, right?
Yeah.
We're like, why is nobody thinking about this? Probably because men are making them.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Gosh.
So the editorial was Vogue Italia was such a big deal. I mean, it was myself and Katty in lots of different positions, holding one another, but referencing lots of art history, Magritte, Marina Abramovic, all around tension and dualities of physical and digital, or attention to the self with Magritte.
Yeah.
So it really was, had such a big impact.
Wow.
It looked fantastic, which was, you know, when you're like, oh, that was great, you know.
Fantastic. Well, I know you haven't quite got to the six yet.
Oh, no.
I'm going to jump in anyway, because you brought up so many points that I want to talk about. And obviously one of them was sustainability, which we still will get to. But I just love the fact that the constant theme that's coming up is this defiance against the patriarchy, against the tech bros, against the, you know. So tell me, is that the impetus behind a lot of what you do And also, just where is it headed? Because ultimately, the consumer is the one that is going to benefit, the folks out there on the street.
Yeah.
So tell me what you're doing to kind of defy those pain points, as you call it.
I feel like the patriarchy just like leans into everything, because it's, you know, we live in a white patriarchal lens. The world, world is built by white cis men. Yeah. So every single part of our life, it kind of infringes on us in that way. Yeah. So I think for us, it's always been around, how do we push past what's already been written? Mm. And when it comes to like, diversity beyond that, you know, in fashion it is, you know, there's a certain type of woman that's portrayed or individual. Sure. So what we're trying to do actually, rather than it be through any specific lens, is actually for it to be a much more of a mirror of society, how it is in all of its color and all of the nodes of gender, and how one can express gender in so many different ways. Yeah. And culturally, historically, gender has been displayed in many more ways than the binary it sits within today. Yeah. And I feel as though fashion in one way lends itself so in such splendor to exploring all those narratives, but it's very much stuck in a specific way, in a specific lens. So I think the work that we're doing is really about how can everyone be represented, and there's a space for everybody at the table. If you want to be creative, then there are tools for you to be creative. If you want to explore your identity, there are tools in the physical and in the digital. And I think when it comes to like the patriarchy, I was privileged enough to speak at Davos, the World Economic Forum, and whilst I was there, I think it's the only time in my life really that I've ever felt weighed down by the patriarchy. I always seen, I've always seen it as something which is, you can push through and build, you know, and build new realities based on like the struggle. But when I was there, I think it's the one of the only places left that are so male heavy. And Dr. Anina, a phenomenal woman who's now one of my dearest friends, built 100 women of Davos, because at that point there wasn't even 100 women at Davos. The World on Economic Forum. So it's still so, I always feel like we're past it all, and there's so, we've done so much and we've come so far. But when you're at places where the real view of the world unites, it's men, and it's white men still.
Yeah, that is shocking, isn't it? Because you do think the world's come a long way, and diversity is all about the here and now.
Yeah.
You know, and sustainability as well. So let's get into that now, because that's a big one. I mean, somebody like Greta Thunberg, who's a real activist when it comes to sustainability, has, you know, basically said she doesn't buy clothes.
Yeah.
She just recycles, or you buy used, or, you know, you try to be sustainable. So tell us about the importance of that. Just how crucial is it? And the fact that, you know, you went, you talked a little bit about the fast fashion. Obviously, they're not about sustainability. Yeah. A lot of what they're producing ends up in landfills around the world. So what can be done about this massive problem?
Because fashion is a big issue, right? So we took to London Fashion Week actually asking, we were on solar paneled vans with solar paneled electric billboards, dressed like this, hanging onto the back of them, on half of my team on, again, electric scooters.
Yeah.
Asking at London Fashion Week, at the end of the world, do we need more clothes?
Yeah.
And the impact of that, well, I mean, I think it caused everyone to actually question that.
Yeah.
We had billboards which asked, which said, if the world, the world is in crisis, do we need more clothes? We created a thunderstorm in augmented reality. Yeah. So as you scanned your phone around, the whole, it turned dark black and a storm occurred. So we were in a storm.
It's climate change.
You know, climate change. We were invoking what is to come. And I think for designers, they produce. They produce in seasons because there's no other model yet.
Yeah.
But with digital product passports, which is a big part of our business model right now, this is all that we're doing is talking to emerging brands globally with a Digital Product Passport, which is a new EU legislation, which next year you'll be fined if you do not comply. You have to have where your clothes have come from, who's made them, the CO2, all of the impact,
absolutely,
but also from an ethics point of view, how much they were paid.
Sure.
Then as it goes into production, as it exits production, goes into the store, it needs to have a resale model. It needs to be able to be resold.
Yes.
And then the next part is it needs to have end of life. Can you plant it? Is it a PU, so stays on the planet for X amount of 1,000 years? And these are all effectively points to or against your brand.
Yeah.
To me, I was like, okay, thank God, or thank whoever, you know, thank the EU right
thank
now.
Thank goodness for that.
Thank the goodness for the EU. Because what that means in a really simple model is that as a brand, you can effectively have royalties.
Yeah.
So you can earn more by selling less.
Sure.
So effectively, you have to build sustainably now. So it means that the, from a factory perspective, you'll have, they'll also have fines. And so you can't not produce sustainably. There are so many phenomenal materials that you can plant and they will biodegrade. There are so many amazing resale markets, Vinted, eBay, Depop, my absolute favorite, Vestiaire. So why not incorporate that into your business model?
Yeah.
Every time it's sold, you earn a little piece of that nugget.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the resale model, if someone like Rihanna or yourself wears it, it'll go up in value.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I'd like to think so, but I don't know about that.
Absolutely. So that new model is, and that's what we are now on a mission to get all of the whole of Europe signed into that. We've got an amazing tech stack, phenomenal solutions that also integrate innovative market way market ways for the audiences to think it's fun.
Yeah,
because it sounds a bit boring.
Well, I think it's important though, because I mean, while you were talking about that, and I was just thinking, I've done a Greta. I've stopped buying new clothes.
Yeah, fantastic.
Or buy sustainably.
Yeah.
Or buy from sustainable labels.
Yeah.
Who do list out where their fabrics come from, how the cotton was made, you know, whether it used a lot of water or less water, and how much of their fabrics are recycled plastic. So I've got like a recycled plastic top, which I love.
Yeah.
It's amazing because it was made out of bottles, and I'm like,
incredible. Phenomenal. Yeah.
And the fabric is just amazing as well.
Yeah.
So there's so much out there that you can find that, you know, buying from B Corp companies are ultimately the way to go. So
there's so
I
many more B Corps now, which is fantastic.
Which
I
is
love seeing
great.
That. Yeah.
Which is great. But again, here you are doing all of this remarkable work. And, you know, you talked about the disconnect and, you know, obviously sustainability is crucial. Going forward, diversity is crucial. But when you come to places elsewhere around the world, here you are in Singapore, in Asia, what do you see? Do you think it needs to catch up?
I think, I mean, the Vogue Singapore team are phenomenal.
Yeah.
I spent some time last year, like, you know, as a mini tourist. I mean, I think I had about 5 hours, so I definitely didn't get to grips with the whole of Singapore. But I asked a friend of mine who's here, I was like, what should I see? And I think actually there's so much innovation here, which is phenomenal. And I think even the campaigns that are being delivered are great, like community, diversity, inclusion is always spoken around. Yeah. And when you have someone like Vogue and the team that are leading that, they are tech first, they're innovation first, their diversity and inclusion, like programming is phenomenal. And so I feel like when all of that is hand in hand, it is progression.
Yeah.
And I think that there's a very wonderful, like the beautiful thing about being here is that the culture of Singapore is, and the history of Singapore is so well kept.
Mm.
And you can feel that. But you can also feel the future, but it's not like a future that you see anywhere else.
Mm.
It's really pivoted into something which is like really tech first. It's like historical technological landscape. And I think that's the beauty of technology. When it's absorbed into culture well, it can build this like new arc and timeline.
Yeah. And that's fine, because I guess, you know, it's more about here Asia as a whole.
Yeah.
Because, yes, Asia's much more likely to embrace technology because they're not so concerned about privacy issues as much as elsewhere. But sustainable practices haven't quite factored into a lot of the thinking around here in Asia. Obviously, it's all about growth, GDP growth, you know, building, constant building of these massive skyscrapers that aren't always done in a sustainable way.
Yeah,
and there's a lot of concrete that goes into it. And, you know, the skyline is constantly evolving. So, I mean, how do you feel Asia is when it comes to those sort of issues around sustainability?
I feel like, you know, interestingly, we don't work that much in the UK.
Yeah.
And the work that we do is on this like global trajectory. Sure. The beauty of the EU is these like consolidated impact driven missions.
Yeah.
Recently, we've been doing a lot of work with the UN, which is fantastic because you see that actually within the UN, they're mirroring a lot of the work that's been completed or near completion or been flagged in the EU.
Yeah.
And so I feel that on that global scale, the UN is doing remarkable work to actually push lots of the continents that aren't necessarily thinking about sustainability because they're thinking about growth.
Yeah.
But actually, again, when I was at Davos, one of the biggest issues was degrowth.
Mm.
And the biggest kind of sweaty moments from all those like big, like lascivious, powerful men, like degrowth, no. But degrowth is peer to peer. Degrowth is more community orientated businesses.
Right.
Degrowth is localized rather than global trajectories.
Yeah. Yeah.
Degrowth is less heavy VC, you know, unicorns. Yeah. But what it is I think is happening a lot is localized innovation. Mm.
Yeah.
And people realizing that sometimes a global market isn't right for your product and actually dealing and only with the local market and selling to your peers is also a business model that may have more longevity than the triple X, you know, VC trajectory.
Yeah.
So I think that lots of like global notes on sustainability will drive impact. And I think that what we'll see is it will mean lots of like in a kind of interesting way, more localized businesses growing tall and becoming like the stallions. So
that's great. I mean, it's so exciting to hear about this picture of this world that you paint that is it's here, but it's in the metaverse. Maybe it's not quite physically here, but we will get there at some stage. So what's next for the Institute of Digital Fashion for you? And, you know, what is next? You obviously have a young child, so you are trying to create a better world for your child.
Yeah.
What happens to us? Do we all, at the end of the planetary, you know, we are living within our planetary means just. But, you know, will there still be fashion at the end of the world? I mean, that's a really crucial question to ask.
I feel as though it will be a lot more. I feel that there's a real issue with climate. And I feel as though we're all obviously really are so carnivorous when it comes to like how we're consuming the planet's resources. And it's counterintuitive and it makes no sense. And when you look at how, like, Scandinavia deal with, like, they're very local and they don't import much at all. And they care about the planet so much and each other. And it's really, like, humbling when you're there. And I think that all of us have this drive to, like, fashion is about expression and freedom and like who you are and expressing it in a specific tone.
Yeah.
There'll always be a drive and need for that. I feel as though what we're seeing at fashion houses currently, which is the turnover of creative directors, I feel as though fashion will change. It will be trend orientated, but depicted by moments in time rather than specific creative directors. We saw how Brat Summer made everyone green. Yeah. And I feel as though that's the ability to create and express yourself will actually be a lot more on a digital sense and a physical craft sense. Yeah. I feel as though gaming with the interoperability of like quantum computing and being able, and spatial computing, being able to touch technology around you, spatial computing leads to a world that is interoperable. Every surface is, you're able to connect with another person or another layer of technology. And that will mean that we'll have more information, but also more different, or the ability to have different versions of ourselves in different realities at the same time. That all sounds very like Black Mirror and off the wall, absolutely crazy.
But it's the reality we're living in now.
But it is the reality. It's augmented reality without the phone. We will, the phones will be lost and gone, and instead it'll be glasses or just woven into the fabric that's around us. And if we feel something, perhaps it will be our heartbeat or a blush of sensitive emotion will change the my collection into a more of a Chet Lowe said garment. So I think that that will be programmed by designers and innovators in those spaces.
Yeah, that's amazing.
With less waste.
We've got so much amazing insight from you. And it's come up to the end of the time that we've been allotted. But I am conscious that we haven't done our rapid fire round. So let's do this really quick.
Oh, now I'm sweating.
Rapid fire round. No, this is kind of fun because it will just be you and your likes, and it gives the listeners
a little bit more of an insight on you.
Well, first of all, for folks who can't see, you are dressed so spectacularly, and I have to ask, who is that designer? Who designed that?
So I've got secondhand Christian Dior boots, and I think they were show pieces because I've got massive feet. I'm 6 foot, so I've got size nine. Yeah. So I'm sure someone fabulous walked in them in a show. I've got Berthold trousers, an amazing designer who is actually an artist, creator, like phenomenal designer. They are gender neutral. They fit any size. They you could fit eight of me in these, or you could fit the pregnant me in them.
Oh, gosh.
The Yves Saint Laurent top, which this has become IODF staple. Yeah. Saran Woodcroft, a phenomenal stylist and actually the godparent of my child, styled me in this on our big campaign that we did for Meta.
Amazing.
And it's never came off. So I wear this every single time I do public speaking. I also have my avatar wears it. So this idea of... this is like my skin. The gloves my sister got from me from a some kind of, I think, S&M kind of sex shop.
Okay.
Like fine.
Great
I
place
have
to
these.
Shop.
I have these. They've got a, they go all the way up to the armpit. So and then I always wear these Balenciaga glasses because I am a mother. I am a CEO and founder. And I work a lot, so they cover up the iPads.
You are absolutely the Gen Z version of Anna Wintour. She wears her sunglasses everywhere, but you've got these big black Balenciaga ones.
They cover the whole face. Yeah.
Fantastic. And, oh God, we're still rapid firing,
aren't
we?
Yeah.
So what's your next project?
Next project is the digital product passports globally and onboarding. Also the mirrors. There's actually a part of the innovation lounge here.
Yeah.
We really believe...
At Next in Vogue here in
Singapore. Next in Vogue. Yeah. Oh, God. It's we really believe that augmented reality is an amazing tool because what we were talking about earlier, you can have live data.
Yeah.
So we want every single store to have a window that people can walk past, see themselves in the garment, come in the dressing rooms, tap, 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 try on garments. Yes. And we've worked on a tech stack that delivers that seamlessly. Brilliant. So we want emerging designers to do that. We want them at fashion weeks. Yes. We also want the ability to have their in their own collection on their e-com, people to be able to try on the collections.
Wow.
So yeah, those two are the big things that we're really shouting about at the moment.
Well, Leanne Elliott Young, it has been an absolute delight to speak to you today. Thank you for that, taking us through that incredible journey of the metaverse and what technology can do to fashion, which is what you're doing with the Institute of Digital Fashion. Thank you for speaking with us today.
Thank you so much. An absolute honor. You're amazing. Thank you. Lovely.